Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, you're listening to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Chad and I were at the New Orleans Investment Conference at the back half of this recent week. You can probably hear some of the background noise from the first half of the show where I feature Byron King. We got to meet up with a lot of companies, touch base also with some of our friends from the sector. It's always nice to reconnect with everybody, see what the vibe is in the market, and also try to learn about a couple new companies. First half of this weekend show is recorded live from the floor of the New Orleans Investment Conference. Second half of the show, we're back in studio chatting with Dan Steffens to get an update on the energy sector. This first half with Byron King really focuses on the state of the resource market. We talk gold, we talk uranium, and we also talk about some of the companies that Byron is focused on. Without further ado, let's get into the weekend show and my conversation with Byron King. All right, sitting down, Byron King. Byron, it's always great to see you at these conferences.
Thank you very much. It's such a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
So Byron, look, you've been at this conference, man, I don't know, what, one, 2 decades? Maybe even more. It's the 50th anniversary. How long have you been here?
Well, I remember coming here in the early 90s, and then I intermittently came in the 90s, but I mean, I'm probably a 20-year guy at this point.
Okay. So Byron, I've been here probably a decade, maybe over a decade at this conference. Mm-hmm. And look, I like this conference because it is smaller in nature, right? You get a chance to sit down with a lot of companies. You see a lot of the same people, but that is also the sector. What's your view on the state of, let's start with the gold sector right now, where gold has been hitting all-time highs. Yes, it's off its high, but you look historically priced, it's at a fantastic price. However, we keep hearing just how much some of these companies are struggling. It's not across the board, but what is your view simply on the gold sector since we're at what is mostly a gold conference?
Well, sure. And this gold conference traces its roots to James Blanchard. And this is the 50th anniversary, the 50th year of this conference. And Jim Blanchard is the reason why we can privately own gold in the United States. He was the lobbyist back in the early 1970s who convinced Congress to pass a law that sort of undid the Franklin Roosevelt seizure of gold from 1933. As far as gold itself goes, I mean, obviously, if you bought gold almost any time in the last 20 years, except for maybe the last month, you've made money, okay? Whether you bought it at 250 or 350 or 750, or I mean, if you bought, you know, I mean, a year ago, gold was, what, 1900? And a month ago, it was almost 28. Now it's in that 27 range or so. You're doing well. This, you know, the gold itself is doing well as a long-term investment, just as the metal for individuals.
Yeah. Oh, we've heard it. Gold's doing great.
Gold's doing great. Now, as far as the gold miners go, well, gee, you know, I will say this, that those $2,800, $2,700, $2,600 prices, that extra $600, $700, and $800 over the last year, that has helped a lot of miners do very well. Sure, their diesel is more expensive. Sure, their concrete and steel is more expensive. Labor, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But at the end of the day, there's a lot of money left to float down to the bottom line. And in a way, I think that is the key to one of the problems we have in the sector, which is a lack of that money flowing out into the development and the exploration sector. There's a little bit of takeover activity in the sector, but when you talk to the developers who don't have an active mind, they're developing, they might have a wonderful project, great geology, great engineering, really wonderful people doing their thing. They'll tell you that I can't make a deal. You know, I need a partner. I need somebody to come in. I need some help. You know, I'll sell it out to somebody, but there's no buyers. And now, why is that? Well, it's because the producers at the money end, at the cash register end of gold, the producers, they don't want to buy something that's going to cost them money. They want to buy something where they can take the money out of the hole. They don't have to put any money back into the hole. You know. That's one of the issues, just in a broad sense.
Well, and that's the M&A we have seen, is more of these either in production or very close to production type of assets. Mm-hmm. Have you seen this before in the sector, though? Is this common? Are we early stage? Or is this a shift that investors need to be aware of, that takeovers just aren't happening down the food chain?
Well, takeovers aren't happening down the food chain, and that's for investors to understand right now. And how long will that last? You know, is this just a seasonal thing? Is it a 6-month thing, a 1-year thing? you know, will it change as the next year unfolds, as 2025 unfolds? You know, we will all be surprised, I suppose. Never, you know, never make too many predictions. The point is that from the industry standpoint, you know, every day that the producers are producing, every day that the miners are mining, you know, that's one less, you know, block of ore down low. They do have to replace that at some point. And so, you know, the water is building up behind the dam. Eventually, you know, the dam will break. Right now, investor-wise, I think there are a lot of really nice, you know, development companies out there, you know, that are absolutely dirt cheap. And if you've got patient money, you should buy it. These are hip pocket plays. You buy it, you hang on to it. You're buying cheap. Can it go down from here? Yeah, everything can go down from here. But you're buying cheap, and you will probably, you know, feel good about yourself a couple of years down the line if you want to wait that long.
Why don't these majors care about growth anymore, though? All we're hearing is they need to replace ounces. They have projects in the development pipeline already, but where's that need to grow at these higher metals prices to, yes, it's great to sell your product for more. Why not make more of it so that you can sell more?
You know, the dynamics of big producers, I suppose, changes from company to company. Every company has their priorities. Every company has their ethic over what they want to do, how they want to do it. It's kind of like the old saying that way back when, nobody ever got fired for using IBM. You know, nobody ever got fired for using, you know, the big name, you know, using AT&T. Well, I guess I could say this about a gold mining company. Nobody's going to fire the CEO for producing lots of gold and making lots of money, even though he really is high-grading the asset. You know, in the 1980s, 90s, 2000, the American tradition was for big old manufacturing companies to asset strip themselves, sell everything off for parts, and, you know, show good earnings every quarter so that the share price would go up. You know, company like General Electric or whatever, or look at Boeing, you know, they took all the money selling their airplanes and distributed it to as share buybacks and as dividends, and then when the time came to develop a new airplane, they went cheap, and they made big mistakes, and they bet the company, and they might lose, you know. Transfer that kind of mindset into the mining industry. The mining industry is mining itself right now. And at some point, and it might be a national policy decision that really begins to drive it, at some point they're going to have to get back into the exploration and development business and not just the cash flow mining business, partly because look around at the rest of the world. I mean, you know, the unipolar world of 20, 25, 30 years ago is gone. It's a multipolar world. You know, Russia's big militarily, China's big industrially. The developing world is developing, and, you know, the whole BRICS situation is out there. A lot of people want to, you know, get out from under the thumb of the U.S. and, you know, dollar dominance. And so that will translate, I think, into, along with Trump wanting to rebuild manufacturing in America, it's going to transfer into the idea of we really do need to produce our own stuff all the way down to, you know, mines in the ground, ore in the ground, mines, mills, you know, refineries, factories that you know, that produce the metal that they need, that we need as a country, you know, as North America to do, you know, to run, to operate.
Okay, but back to the whole financing environment then, because look, the majors, they are funding some of the juniors, some of the smaller companies. I know everyone wants takeovers, but look, any money flowing down to some of these other companies to do some of the exploration is good. The capital markets have remained still fairly tough for a lot of these companies unless they have a major backer behind them. And then development companies, they are looking at royalties, streams, all the different avenues you can. What do you look for when you're looking at or analyzing junior, mid-tier companies when it comes to the type of allocation they have in shares? Do you like to see the major already in there with a position? Do you like to see other big-name investors, or do you like it in a way to almost be less complicated?
Well, when I look at almost any company, I approach everyone as an individual entity, you know what I mean? You know, where are, you know, jurisdictionally, you know, what country, what province, what state, what county even, you know, where are you? What's your geology? Is your geology any good? You know, how much growth is there? You know, it's that drill it to kill it kind of a thing. If, you know, you might be a really great science experiment. You might be the perfect model for, you know, for a geology course in ore deposits, but you're never going to be, you know, the mine that gets big. You look at the management teams. You look at all of that. I don't mind seeing, you know, a large company come in early on, although I don't want to see the company sort of give itself. It's always nice to see somebody working with, you know, a large miner, because it gives you a sense of the quality assurance that's happening on the project. Big mining companies have a certain way of doing things. They have certain technical standards. They want the mapping to be done a certain way, the geophysics to be done a certain way. They want the reports to be written a certain way. You know, things have to be compliant with big company standards. It can be more expensive, but there's nothing wrong with that, because it pays itself all back downstream, you know, if or when, you know, the company gets taken over. If it's not there, if the big company isn't there, I certainly don't mind, you know, if they need the money. I mean, there are, you can make good deals with royalty companies, streaming companies. If you need the money, you need the money. You are giving away a whack of the upside, you know, down there, but you know, without that money, there may never be an upside. You know, there might be no side. You know, if you can't have the money to operate. I mean, I've spoken to small, you know, relatively small exploration or development companies, and they're telling me that, oh yeah, we drilled this 1,000-meter hole looking for this or that, and I'm like, 1,000? Did you pay for that yourself? I mean, that's expensive. I'm okay with 200- and 300-meter holes. You know, knock those things out. You know, I mean, it depends on the geology and where you are and what the drilling costs are. But 1,000, when you start drilling these 1,000-meter exploration holes, you're being pretty ambitious. Whose money are you burning? Is that shareholder money just going down that one hole? It better be a good hole. It better be, you know. So,
but that's copper plays too, usually. That's what we see to try to delineate copper plays. And mm-hmm. One thing walking around this conference too is that there are a couple copper companies here. We always see some copper companies around mm-hmm. outside of the precious metals companies, right. Gold and silver. Also a lot more uranium companies. Yes. Makes sense. That uranium sector has been really moving. What's your thought on either the copper sector or the uranium sector in terms of stability and potentially strength for those?
Well, let's talk uranium for a few minutes. We are in the early to mid innings of a uranium bull market. I mean, you know, if you miss the train leaving the station, you're not going to catch up on that. But we're well into a very good, solid uranium run. The whole nuclear concept has become bipartisan in the United States. You know, it used to be, oh, nuclear, Three Mile Island, Fukushima, you know, Hiroshima, whatever. It was very anti-nuclear sentiment out there. All of a sudden, big tech decided they needed lots and lots of clean, green, you know, reliable 24/7 electricity to run their data centers. And next thing you know, hey, we're going to reopen Three Mile Island. Who would have thought that? But that is emblematic of, you know, the strength of the nuclear sector. So uranium has been underinvested, underexplored, underdeveloped for 25, 30 years, probably since the end of the Cold War, really, since the early 90s. And then there are really just a handful of companies that you would want to play with, big one like, you know, Cameco, but then UEC, Uranium Energy Corporation, you know, NexGen, companies that have domestic processing, energy fuels out in Blanding, Utah, you know.
Is it all about domestic then? Because the U.S. needs that, and quite frankly, it's better to be domestic, it seems like.
Yeah, absolutely. And when I say domestic, I mean U.S. and Canada, just under the trade agreements. Because if you, you know, if you follow the news, I'm sure you do, you know that it's harder and harder to get that big whack of uranium out of Russia that the West has been importing for decades, since the end of the Cold War, since 1991-92. And even, you know, Kazakhstan uranium, I mean, sure, they mine it and process it in Kazakhstan, but how do you think they get it out of that country? Well, they put it on these things called railroad cars, and they track it across Russia to the port of St. Petersburg, and they put it on ships. Well, guess what? We're 3 years into a war with Russia, you know, and, you know, I mean, you know, don't get me started on that, but I mean, with the sanctions on Russia, on Russian money, on Russian banking, on the SWIFT system, sanctions on ships that call at the port of St. Petersburg, it is very, very, very difficult and problematic to get, you know, uranium out of Russia, whether it's Russian uranium that's been processed in that country or the Kazakh material. And then the other side of it is that the Russians, they're shutting off exports to the West on that, and they'll use it internally, send it to friendly countries, if not, you know, send it to China. So the West, the U.S. and Canada, basically must get their act together in terms of rebuilding the nuclear industry. This is a multi-year, this is a generational matter. If you're not in uranium yet, get there, because, you know, yeah, sure, there's ups and downs, there's good days and bad days in the market, but if you're not there, get there, because it's a place to be for the next 25 years.
Well, and the trend has been on the uranium bull's side, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
And the news has been on the whole nuclear industry as well,
yeah,
with these tech companies investing.
Yeah.
What stocks do you like in the uranium sector then? There's not nearly as many gold stocks, or there's not nearly as many as there are gold stocks.
Right.
So how do you decipher what are the better uranium stocks.
Well, I mean, if you only want to deal with big guys, it would be Cameco. But I mean, you look at UEC, Uranium Energy Corp. They still have upside, you know, growth-wise. Energy Fuels, I like them. They have an up-and-running processing facility in Utah, which I've visited. They process uranium and vanadium, and they have a side channel for rare earth elements. And so, well-run company, really great people. They know what they're doing. And
do you bother with the explorers in uranium? What about all these new players in the Athabasca Basin?
Well, now we're starting to get into, you know, to deep stock picking. I do follow them. At this point, I'm not going to talk about them, you know, on this show, just because I'm not ready to sort of name names on those guys. I've followed them, but they're out there. But
oh, they are. There's more of them out there now,
more,
too.
More,
but
yeah.
Again, that's something where it costs a lot to drill, too. Yeah. They don't need to drill as many holes, but it does cost a lot, and they're looking all over the basin now.
Well, there's a lot of excitement in exploration, but then when you have to look at the timing of it as well. You know, you can drill through solid uranium if you want. You know, you can drill through all the pitch blend or all the uranium bearing materials you want. But before you extract, you know, 1 pound of this stuff, it's going to be a long time. It's a long and rocky road to develop most of these projects. And we're looking years down the line. And so, you know, right now at the end of 2024, I think you want to be careful about just sort of investing by press release in terms of, you know, where do you want to put the core elements of your money right now? You know, there's still a lot of unsettled economic issues, political issues. I mean, Trump won the election, but Trump's not going to be president until January 20th, you know, and we hope nothing bad happens along the way. I mean, he's only had two assassination attempts that we know about. And if you look at it as sort of like the Trump campaign was Star Wars, you know, the rebels fighting the Empire, you know, and at the end they blew up the Death Star. You know, what was the sequel to that movie? It's called The Empire Strikes Back. You know, so, you know, Trump is in for his own rocky road ahead. And that's all political, but it's all going to translate into, you know, how he governs. The good news about the nuclear side is that it seems to be pretty bipartisan. You know, nuclear is clean, green, and big tech likes it. And so Democrats are okay with it. And it's clean, green, reliable, and there's a lot of money and jobs there, and Republicans like it. So, and when you want to rebuild manufacturing in America, you better rebuild your nuclear sector. When you want to jobs in America, go nuclear. You want steel workers to work, go nuclear. So there's a lot of play on the nuclear side.
Oh, yeah. Right now, it's a perfect storm, it seems like, for that whole sector. What about some gold stocks, though? What do you like in terms of gold stocks? Which ones separate the from the pack in your eyes?
Okay. One of the great things about being here in New Orleans is that it's a nice way of catching up on a whole lot of companies that I've followed for years. And just full disclosure, I mean, a lot of the CEOs, the technical staff, they're friends of mine. I mean, I know them. I've had lunch with them. I've had dinner with them. I've visited their sites and whatever. And I like to think I hang out with a high class of people. So I think they're good people. And the companies that I've followed, they're good jurisdictions, good geology, good management teams. They know what they're doing. And just in terms of some names of companies, I mean, one company is on the slightly large side, Avino Silver and Gold, down in Durango, Mexico. I visited that project, I think, about 3 times. Great company. Share price is wonderful. Share price looks great in the last, you know, 6 or 8 months. I mean, it's last year, really. And so Avino, ASM, it was a nice catch up here. Last summer, you know, we had a big problem up in the Yukon when Victoria Gold had at the Eagle Mine, when their tailings pile collapsed, you know, landslide, whatever they want to call it. And, you know, the government moved in, basically, you know, took things over, turned it into a receivership. And we're 5 and 6 months down the line. And it is not, shall we say, a crisp and efficient cleanup situation. Most of the Yukon stocks, the whole Yukon sector, suffered last summer. You could basically look at it. I think it was a June 29th or something that had happened, 27th, whatever. You could look at the stock tickers within minutes, within hours of the news hitting. You know, everything slid down. I mean, even darlings like Snowline, you know, they took a hit. So anyhow, one of my visits here in New Orleans was with Banyan Gold, and I'm just completely impressed with what they're doing there. You know, first of all, Banyan is not Victoria Gold. There are certain, you know, shareholder commonalities and everything, but it's a different company, different rocks, different geology, different location, different mineability, different process, you know, no tailings pile, you know, I mean, the 7 million ounces of gold and more to come. They did some amazing drilling over the summer and some geophysics over the summer that really is going to lead to, I believe, in my humble opinion, expanding the resource, you know, in 2025, in the next year to come. And it's absolutely dirt cheap. But talk about buying shares, putting them in your pocket, and then don't worry about it. Just go away for a while. Go to the beach. You know, have a go to a restaurant, have a nice dinner. You know, and come back and talk to me in 6 months or a year. Banyan Gold is absolutely dirt cheap. Listen to this. That's me pounding the table. Banyan Gold and dirt cheap. They're giving those shares away. So
who takes out Banyan though? Who's the acquirer of Banyan?
Well, they're literally right next to Coeur, and that's one option. And
do they need to go down the development road? What do you want to see out of Banyan moving forward here? They, as you said, already 7 million ounces. Right. That is all in, I believe, the inferred category. So yep. Plenty of room to upgrade that.
Plenty
but
of room to
is
upgrade.
It economics? Is it continuing to expand? What do you think moves the needle for that company?
Well, I think they're going to, based on the recent drilling, they've actually found some high grade, and that's always exciting. And they have managed to figure out that one of their deposits actually extends underneath the Armac deposit. And so they've just sort of changed the whole mining model of what they're doing. And you throw in some high grade and you throw in, a large extension of the ore body, it changes the whole dynamics of what you can do with something like that. And that's just one example. I mean, another example of a company that's not here, but which I've followed and which I like, Western Copper and Gold, with the Casino deposit. I was up there last summer. Literally, when you're at the Casino deposit, you are literally standing on the ore body. You're the soles of your boots are digging into the rock that could easily just, you put it in a truck and haul it to the mill. And so they have a very nice relationship with Rio Tinto. There's plenty of talk in the Yukon and in British Columbia and with Federal Canada, with Ottawa, about extending the road to find a way to get road access, connecting the power grid, the power lines, the grid between Yukon and British Columbia, so that they can wheel the power up there that they need. Now, this is a longer-term item. I mean, if they started digging a mine tomorrow morning, which they aren't, but if they did, you wouldn't see metal out of there till 2032. But again, this is one of these companies that you buy some shares, you put them in your pocket, and in a figurative sense, and you just let it run. It's Casino deposit is 14 million ounces of gold, and what is it, 7 billion pounds of copper? I mean, it's one of the largest undeveloped and most developable, copper gold projects in North America, in the Yukon. Very little in terms of environmental issues. The way they've designed the mine, if everything went wrong, it would still be a long way before you put one drop of, pollution into the Yukon River. It's a very mineable, buildable project over the long term. That's another of the Yukon place.
Okay. Catching a theme from you, big resources,
yeah,
hey?
Yeah, yeah.
And there are big resources out there. So I think that is something that investors can focus on. Mm-hmm. Look, it's one thing we keep hearing. A lot of opportunities in the sector. You just do need to be selective because there are a lot of companies as well. So, hey, Byron, it's always great sitting down
with
you.
It's
always great
seeing
you at these conferences. So thank you for your time.
I appreciate it. It's great to speak with you. And good luck to everybody out there who's listening.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.